Welcome to The Wrap, a weekly podcast covering women's sports news. My name is Chloe Dalton. I play AFLW for the GWS Giants, and I'm an Olympic gold medalist in rugby sevens. Every week, I'm joined on the show by my co-host, Bez, who's across all things women's sports head researcher and merch queen at TFAP and rugby aficionado. It's a bad word. Bez, what have we got this week?
Taking a look around the grounds, Melbourne Victory break Sydney FC's hearts again. The Tassie Tigers and Elise Villani win their first WNCL title. And we should probably talk about the heartbreak of Ash Barty's retirement. Genuine tears.
I don't want to talk about it, but we probably should. For our key story, we'll discuss Australian boxer Ebony Bridges, who claimed the IBF bantamweight world title over the weekend and has drawn mixed opinions about her choice to weigh in wearing lingerie.
And in the ice bath with Budgie Smuggler, we chat to Paralympic bronze medalist and member of the newly announced Paramatildas team, Georgia Bakoff.
This podcast drops every Tuesday morning at 6 a.m. It also comes in email format, so you can get it delivered straight to your inbox to read with your morning coffee on a Tuesday. I'll put the link in the show notes so you can subscribe to the email or to the podcast too. Let's take a look around the grounds.
In soccer, the Melbourne Victory limped into the finals, but that counted for naught on Sunday as they attempted to go back-to-back against Sydney FC in the A-League Women's Grand Final. They scraped into the finals, so they set in fourth spot and defeated both Adelaide and Melbourne City on their way to the big dance. Once they got there, as we all know, it's what happens on the day that counts. They got the job done on the biggest stage, defeating Sydney FC 2-1. Sydney FC dominated for long periods of the match, and that was reinforced when Victory's goalkeeper Casey Dumont was named player of the match. Victory's first goal came against the run of play when shortly after halftime, midfielder Amy Jackson popped up at the back post to head home a curling cross from Matilda's star, Kyra Cooney Cross. And 15 minutes later, Victory made it two when striker Catherine Zimmerman buried a goal through Jade Matheson-Wyman's legs after a sloppy Sydney FC attempted clearance. Sydney FC pulled a goal back minutes later when Courtney Vine converted, but they couldn't find an equaliser and the Victory held on for the win and back-to-back trophies. Well done, Melbourne Victory.
In AFLW, the postponed qualifying final between the Lions and the Collingwood Magpies was played at the Gabba on Sunday after a week delay due to COVID ripping through the Magpies squad. The Lions were exceptional. They dominated from the outset, scoring a big 10-goals-10-70 to 3-goals-2-20 victory. I think throughout the season, Collingwood, well, they were battered with some big ACL injuries, losing key players from their midfield. So it was always going to be a tough ask for them to recover from COVID and play against one of the best teams in the comp, well, defending champions in Brisbane. Brisbane's winger, the Irish player Ola O'Dwyer, who I would say has probably been the most improved player of the competition, put on a show. So her mum and sister flew over from Ireland 3 days before the game to see their first ever AFLW game live. And Ola was everywhere, finishing with 19 disposals, a long-range goal, and a match-high 392 metres gained. The prelim finals are now all set. I still don't even really understand what the final names are, but the qualifying finals are done. Now the prelim finals are done. So whoever wins the prelim is into the grand final. So a bit of history is going to be made on Saturday, which is really exciting. The Melbourne Demons are going to host the Brisbane Lions at the MCG. It will be the first ever AFLW match to be held at the home of footy. The other prelim final will see the Adelaide Crows host Frio at Adelaide Oval. The matches will be back-to-back. We'll have times in what to watch at the end of the podcast. But in good news, the AFL have pushed back the men's round three match between the Gold Coast Suns and the GWS Giants to ensure clear air for the women's finals.
Can we get an early tip from you, please, Chloe? I know you normally do this for the press, but let's go early here.
I have done an article on this, so I'm going to just continue with that. I'm calling the D's to win the flag, probably coming up against the Crows in the final.
Excellent. Heard it here first. In NRLW, the last round of the comp was played over the weekend, and again, finals are everywhere. Finals are set. The Broncos secured the minor premiership and ended Parramatta's finals chances in the process with a huge 38-4 win in the final round of the regular season. The Gold Coast Titans grabbed third place in the ladder with a tough 14-10 win over Newcastle. The Titans broke a 10-all deadlock with 3 minutes left through Karina Brown and will now face the St. George Illawarra Dragons, who finished second after beating the Sydney Roosters 16-10 on Saturday. The Roosters snuck into the finals in fourth spot and will face the Broncos on Sunday at Leichhardt. Leichhardt will host the historic first semi-final series of the NRLW Premiership with a Super Sunday doubleheader to determine the grand finalists of this season's NRLW competition.
In basketball, the Melbourne Boomers opened their semi-final series with an impressive comeback win over the Adelaide Lightning on Thursday night. Adelaide were up 47-32 at halftime, and it took a team effort to change the momentum of the match. All starting five Boomers ended in double figures, with Lindsay Allen leading the scoring with 24 points. Ezzy Magbegor, who was awarded the 2021-22 WNBL Betty Watson Australian Youth Player of the Year last week, turned up the defensive heat, shutting down the Lightning, and in the process collected some impressive stats. She had 14 points, 5 rebounds, and 2 steals. The second half was all Melbourne as they outscored Adelaide 63-17.
That is some half of basketball.
It's impressive, right? What a turnaround.
Huge.
Love to know the halftime speech there. To record a final score of 95-64 in their impressive game one victory. Game two was in Adelaide, and once again, the Boomers had to come from behind after the Lightning, led by Alana Smith, got out to an early lead. The Boomers fought back and were led by in-form import Lindsay Allen with 15 points, 3 rebounds and 3 assists. And once again, Ezzy, the young star, contributed on both ends of the court, 12 rebounds and 10 points. Final score, a bit of a low-scoring one, 61-49, to see Melbourne now return home ahead of having a home court advantage in the best of three championship series for the grand final, which is kind of meant to begin next Saturday, but we'll see what happens with this next COVID story.
Was meant to start next Saturday, but the spicy cough has spoken.
In the other semi-final series, the Canberra Capitals went down to Perth Lynx last Thursday night, 77-91 in Perth. Sammy Whitcomb put up a game-high 20 points and 11 rebounds and was hugely influential for the Lynx. Game two was postponed late on Sunday after the spicy cough got into the Canberra Capitals squad due to some pretty strict rules from the ACT government. COVID guidelines, affected athletes cannot leave isolation until they produce a negative PCR test, leaving the Capitals unable to field the 7 players required to hold the game. It can take a long time after you've had COVID to record a negative test. So I'm a little bit concerned that they might not be able to field a team for a while.
Yeah. And also, having done some flag waving yourself in basketball, 7 players, they can play with 7 players. That's 2 on the bench for a whole match.
Thank you for the reference of the fact that I just sat on the bench a lot. I appreciate that. Yeah, because if that was me, like back when I was playing at the Flames, if that was me that suddenly had to play big minutes, it's the most you've ever played in your career and it's in a semi-final, it's a little bit stressful, really.
Yeah, wow. 7 seems minimal.
Mm.
Very minimal. All right. In cricket, more finals. Can we just, it's just finals everywhere. It's great.
Everywhere.
The Aussie women's cricket team finished their pool matches undefeated when they got over Bangladesh in some seriously windy conditions in Wellington. Now, I'm a big cricket fan. Had this on the telly, looked at I think I'd missed maybe the first over, I think. Looked at the wickets and I thought, there's something missing. So it was so windy they had to remove the bales because they were just blowing off. So they played the match with the bales off, which is, yeah, anyway, a sight to see.
Has that happened before?
I'm sure it has somewhere, but I definitely haven't seen it. Windy Wellington living up to its name. Anyway, the Bangladeshis really challenged the Australians, who had to fight hard to reach their 136 winning total. They reduced to 4-41 and then 5-70 during their run chase before Beth Mooney and Annabelle Sutherland sealed the win. So the ODI World Cup now moved into the final stage, and the Aussies will be sweating on the fitness of Elise Perry, who didn't play against Bangladesh. She was forced from the field due to back spasms in their previous game against South Africa, and there is potential that she will be used as a batter only in the semi-final. I'd really feel for Perry if she does miss out on these finals again after missing the T20 World Cup in Melbourne 2 years ago, just before the world ended. So hopefully she can get those back spasms under control and make an impact, because she has been playing some exceptional cricket over there. The Aussies will face the West Indies in the semi-final after India crashed out with a final ball loss at the hands of South Africa last night, Sunday night, that is. Chasing 275 for victory, South Africa hit 7 off the final Depti Sharma over to end the tournament of the 2017 finalists. So that result means that South Africa will come up against England in the second semi-final on Thursday, and our undefeated Aussies will battle the West Indies on Wednesday once again in Wellington. That match will start at 9 a.m. AEDT. And let's not forget, it's on our KO Freebies channel, so make sure you get around it.
More cricket news. The WNCL Grand Final between the Tasmanian Tigers and South Australian Scorpions, great names, was played on Sunday at Hobart's Blundstone Arena, and Tasmanian skipper Elise Villani finally won the trophy after 8 attempts. Villani was sublime with the bat alongside emerging star Emma Mannix-Greaves as they shared in a record 205-run partnership. Both recorded unbeaten centuries to guide Tasmania to a 9-wicket win over South Australia and complete a season of dominance. Courtney Webb, my old Carlton teammate, was strong for the Scorpions, and her 88 runs was not only her highest score in the WNCL, but helped the Scorpions set a solid total of 8 for 242. But it wasn't to be enough, and Captain Villani was named Player of the Match for her huge innings and was effusive in her praise for the Tasmanian cricket community, saying, "For the past players who have come before us and been a part of the journey, hopefully today we made you proud. To the Tassie community who came out to support us, thank you. Hopefully we've gained a few more supporters and helped to inspire the next generation of Tassie Tigers."
So good. In netball, Suncorp Super Netball is back, and the grand final rematch between the New South Wales Swifts and the GWS Giants delivered. It was close all the way with no more than 5 goals separating the two fierce rivals in the hard-fought derby, but it was a sad sight with 12 minutes left in the match that left the Swifts players and fans devastated. Star shooter Sam Wallace went down hard, and the vision of the Trinidadian sharpshooter collapsing to the court clutching her right knee left her teammates pretty emotional. The Swifts confirmed the shattering news late on Sunday that Wallace has ruptured her ACL and will miss the season. The stoppage and injury derailed the Swifts for a short time, and it was enough to allow the Giants to get the win 57-55 in front of a super loud crowd of 7,261 who produced a cracking atmosphere.
Go the Giants. Okay, final story of Around the Grounds. There's been a lot of things happening in women's sports news this week. It's tennis. It's Ash Barty. She shocked the world when she announced her retirement last week at the age of 25. Her achievements are immense. 3 Grand Slam titles, 15 singles titles, 121 weeks at number one, and $32 million in career earnings. Ash acknowledged her Australian Open win this year after a Wimbledon title in 2021 was the perfect stage to finish my career, a wonderful celebration to farewell this period of my life. Barty broke the news through an emotional interview with her longtime doubles partner and really close friend Casey Delacqua, who she admitted was like a tour mum when she was young. She said she wasn't going to be lost on tennis overall and noted that she was looking forward to mentoring younger Australian girls playing tennis, particularly those aged 15 to 18 years old. She spoke about understanding it is a really important period in any young girl's life, and I know firsthand just how tricky those years can be for a female athlete who is either trying to become professional or who has already taken steps into that space. She's also keen to spend more time in Indigenous communities and said that seeing the smiles on the faces of the kids of the Mutijulu community near Uluru in late February was such a grounding, rewarding, and inspiring experience. Ash has also addressed the rumours flying around and talked about the memes that have been made. Sorry, I was guilty of making one of those on the TFAB Instagram page. And there were some questions of people commenting on the post saying, can't you just celebrate and acknowledge her career? I think absolutely. That's the priority is to recognise how incredible she has been. But I think there's a lot of respect for her as an athlete, the fact that people are talking about the fact that she could be playing other sports like golf or crossing over to AFLW. She sadly said, competitively, let's just say that I will be happy to stop shooting 10 over par and actually get back to playing more than once in every 6 months. Golf truly is my hobby, the one thing I find relaxing. She's kind of silenced any speculation of her making a transition, and we have to be okay with that for now, I'd say.
I don't know. There's more left in her, surely. Bit of golf.
Surely.
Bit of golf.
Let's take a look at the key story.
All right. Stepping into the ring in boxing, Ebony Bridges has beaten Argentine Maria Cecilia Roman to claim the IBF bantamweight world title in front of 12,000 fans in Leeds, United Kingdom. The judges unanimously awarded the 10-round contest to Bridges 100-91, 97-93, and 97-93. Bridges caught plenty of comment and controversy for her tendency to weigh in wearing lingerie. Her appearance at Wayne's has prompted some to criticise Bridges for flaunting her body in an attempt to get eyeballs on women's boxing. Those critics include Shannon Courtney, who defeated Bridges in her first world title bout in March last year. After the fight, Courtney said, "I don't like the way that she was trying to sell the fight, and I feel like she was selling the fight for the wrong reasons, talking about lingerie and things like that, but it attracted massive numbers, so fair play to her for that."
So there's been a fair bit of controversy around it, and the boxing purists are quick to criticise it. Bridges herself has been quoted saying, "I'm not using sex to sell, I'm just using myself. And if I'm sexy, then F it. It's okay to be a woman in boxing. We don't have to be masculine. It's great to see the girls now wearing makeup and dressing up. I'm breaking down the stereotypes of female boxing."
She doubled down on that post that win and again basically stood up to her critics saying, "You guys think I can't fight because I can fight. I can box, I can fight, and I can look hot on the scales." All the critics are saying the Aussie fighter showed some serious improvement in her second world title fight, noting improvements in her jab and her footwork, which really paid dividends against the Argentine fighter. Thoughts on the lingerie, Chloe?
It's a really tricky one because I think if we look at some recent research that's come out, so Claire Hanlon in Victoria has done a lot of study on this topic. We actually chatted to Claire really early in the wrap, one of the first episodes of the wrap, around her studies. And they've just released another follow-up. So the effects of sport uniform policy changes to girls and women's study, which revealed that almost half of Australian women would continue playing a sport long-term if they felt more comfortable in their uniforms. They've actually introduced new uniform rules across a range of sports, including swimming and netball. And they've actually started to see really positive results from this. And also looking at sports like cricket, where girls have had to wear white pants or white shorts, allowing them to wear darker coloured shirts so they don't have to be worried about their period and other factors like that. So we're starting to see this move of allowing girls to be comfortable and have more choice over what they're wearing. And I think really important to make the distinction that with Ebony, no one's forcing her to wear lingerie. This is her choice. And so she's free to wear whatever she wants. She's made the choice to wear the lingerie. My concern with it is that promoting an image to younger girls who may have body image issues, who may want to be a boxer, who then make the association, she's a really well-known boxer, she's winning fights, she has this huge following because of the lingerie. It's a tricky distinction between the two.
Yeah, I agree. And another example in this space was the German women's gymnastic team, who ditched the traditional high-cut leg-bearing leotards for ankle-length unitards. And they came out and said straight away, this is a protest against the sexualization of their bodies. So they wore those unitards at the Tokyo Olympics. I think you're right. If absolutely it is the athlete's choice, and I'm all for that choice. And, you know, Ebony is comfortable in her body and that's wonderful. And she is definitely very vocal in speaking out towards wanting boxing to be more feminine and not looked upon as a male-dominated sport, power to her. But the objectification of the female athlete's body is not – it is a thing. It happens. And, yeah, I think, like you said, we have to really think of the kids and the youngsters looking up to her and what kind of message that sends into that space.
Now it's time for the Budgie Smuggler ice bath.
This week in the Ice Bath with Budgie Smuggler, we chat to Paralympic bronze medalist and member of the newly announced Paramatildas team, Georgia Bakoff. At the 2012 Paralympics, Georgia won a bronze medal in the women's javelin throw in the F3738 class. Earlier this month, Georgia was a key player in Football Australia's launch of the Paramatildas, Australia's first national team for women and girls with cerebral palsy, acquired brain injury, ABI, and symptoms of stroke. CP football is a seven-a-side sport with smaller goals, 30-minute halves, and no offside. Oh, that's great, because offside is confusing. Chloe caught up with Georgia earlier this week.
Georgia, thanks so much for coming on and having a chat with us today on The Wrap. To get us started, can you tell us a bit about how you first started playing soccer?
Yeah, of course. I have a mum who is, she was a PE teacher and a special ed teacher, and a dad who played rugby, hockey, and soccer. So I didn't really have much choice. They sort of threw us in, my brother and I threw us into sport at a very, very early age. And so it just seemed very natural that I'd start playing soccer at my local football club down at Lake Macquarie at Valentine Elibana Soccer Club. At the time, this was back in the year 2000, I was turning 7. I was the only girl who was part of the club, let alone someone who had cerebral palsy. And I loved it. It was so good.
And a few years later, you made the transition to athletics and you represented your country at the Paralympics. Was that something that was always a dream for you?
I think the dream has always been to play soccer for Australia. Athletics, I think, might have been the next best thing. I played a lot of cricket, and so I think that's how javelin came about. And I think just being part of the cerebral palsy community, it just sort of felt like it was the right, well, not the right decision, but it was just a very easy transition to go into that. And who wouldn't take up an opportunity to train, even though it was a lot of hard work, to train and head over to London and, compete. I think I was 19 at the time. So, yeah, it was an amazing experience.
So the dream was to always play soccer. What did it mean to you for the Paramatildas to recently be announced as a team that's joining Football Australia and joining the likes of the Matildas and the Socceroos as well?
Yeah, I think this is something that we've been thinking about, how to actually answer this question, because there are no words. Some of the girls who are on the team, part of the squad with me, it's incredible, really, that I don't really know what else to say. I remember when I was, 6-year-old Georgia, who would literally dream about putting on the green and gold jersey. And I think now that there's this great opportunity for women who have cerebral palsy, acquired brain injuries or symptoms of stroke, to represent our community and young girls, not just boys. Seeing someone who's a lot older than you, who has a AFO or a splint on her arm, and she's kicking the ball around the footy field, I think would have given 6-year-old George a lot of hope. It's pretty indescribable. We're really excited.
It's really special. So what is up next? What does it look like to be involved with the Paramatildas, and what's coming up for you guys?
Yeah, it's been quite a whirlwind. This all started about maybe 4 years ago. And we've been waiting for a very long time. We're heading over to Spain in May for the very first World Cup. And so it's just all of a sudden happened so quickly. At the moment, it's been really hard to try and gather together over the last 12 to 18 months as a squad because of COVID. We've been training just independently, and we've got our first selection camp this weekend at the AIS in Canberra. So it'll be really, really good to see some of the girls. I haven't seen them since 2019.
Wow.
There's a few girls from all over the place. So, yeah, it's really, really exciting.
And part of the launch was this idea around equal play. What does equal play mean to you?
I think we see these, like, elite teams who represent our country really well, the Matildas, the Socceroos. But I think this is a really good way to go forward, seeing all these other national teams who, we have had to face lots of different things throughout life that have been really challenging, and we've had to really fight. And I think the girls on the squad, we really resonate that we are fierce females, and we want to, we would love to have the opportunity to represent our country. That, and it is really special. Not many people get to have this opportunity. to play sport on a platform like this. And so I think equal play, if we're going to open up new pathways and avenues for more and more people to play football and play sport in all many, you know, so many different ways, yeah, I'm really excited for what the next few years will look like, what the future will hold. So, yeah.
I cannot wait to keep supporting you guys and watching you guys as you compete. And I'll make sure I pop the link in the show notes as well for people that can follow along on Instagram, the Paramatildas, and how people can support you guys as well. So congratulations. So stoked that you guys have the opportunity to represent your country on this stage, and really look forward to watching.
Thanks so much.
Let's take a look at what to watch. In rugby league, the NRLW has reached the semi-final stage, and the two matches will be played back-to-back at Leichhardt Oval on Sunday. Game one will kick off at 12 noon and be followed by the second match at 1:45 p.m. It'll be a cracking day on the hill, but if you can't get out to Leichhardt, you can watch live on the Nine Network, Fox Sports and Sky New Zealand.
In rugby union, the top-of-the-table clash between four-time champs, the New South Wales Waratahs, and newcomers Fijiana Drua will be played on Friday night in Queensland. Kickoff is at 4 p.m. local time, so that's 5 p.m. daylight saving time for those not in Queensland. And you can watch what should be a rip snorter of a match live on Stan.
In footy, AFLW preliminary finals are this Saturday. The Demons will host the Lions at the MCG at 12:40 p.m. and that match will be followed by the second prelim final between the Crows and the Dockers at Adelaide Oval, 2:40 p.m. AEDT, which is 2:10 p.m. local Adelaide time. You can watch both matches live on the Seven Network, Fox Footy, KO, and via the AFL and AFLW official app. How good is it to have like five different places where you can watch one game of women's sport? We love that.
And free-to-air. Let's not forget free-to-air. Thank you, Seven.
Yes. And that's the wrap.
Well done, Chloe.
You too.
On holidays, not at home.
Down the coast, a few birds chirping in the background. I think I was in a really creaky chair, so hopefully producer Bailey can edit it out.
Getting back to nature.
Living it up. We'll see you next week.
See you next week, friend.